Hey everyone, this is John.
Luarsh.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the official show for the month of December 2020. But like every official show at the end of the year, it's going to be a look back at 2020 as a whole and in terms of the video games that came out, yeah. Not everything that happened in 2020.
In past ones, didn't you give out awards to the video games?
We stopped doing awards because they're dumb.
Yeah.
Really? I liked them.
Well, I did it a couple of times, and I tried to give, like, everything its own individual award, and it was just way too much work for just a lot of
stuff. So they're not dumb, you're just lazy.
They're dumb, and I did it because
they're
dumb.
And I'm lazy.
you give everything an award. Fuck you. I sent you the list a week in advance.
I should have.
Okay, so in 2021, you can do awards if you want.
I don't have awards.
But we're going to go through the most notable, and there are quite a few games that came out in 2020 that I think are worth mentioning. Let's go through month by month, and if we feel like pausing and discussing a game at length, we can do that for whatever we feel like.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be it for this show. No real news to discuss. We will bring up new releases as they come out at the end of the show, and there are some other games that we've been playing recently that come up as we go. We'll pause and talk about those as well. And there's not going to be a preview for January. We will work out like a January preview at some point next month because there are a few games that are going to be worth talking about. But
some bookkeeping out of the way.
Yeah. Let's kick things off with January 2020. Probably the slowest month that we're going to talk about throughout retrospective here.
Two games came out.
Two notable games, and that is To the Moon, which is
a game about faking the moon landing. Right.
Which
of course did not happen.
It's an accurate recounting of how we faked the moon landing.
Yeah, the moon landing and Corona, completely made up for the government.
Well,
yeah.
Corona's real, it's just like because of the 5G towers.
Yeah, exactly.
So To the Moon, it's kind of described as an RPG. It's more of like a narrative, like story-focused game. There's like made an RPG maker, so it kind of has like the 16-bit visual RPG style to it. And then the other one, like an actual RPG, is Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE Encore, which is a mouthful. This is a port of a Wii U game. So the first notable retail Switch game that came out in 2020 was a Wii U port. There were quite a few of those throughout 2020.
Yeah, there was.
This game is actually legit. Like, this is a good RPG. If you like games like Persona, I recently played through Persona 4. I think last year, 2019,
you started Persona 5 yet?
I started Persona 5. I'm a couple weeks into it in terms of the game clock. And yeah, Tokyo Mirage Sessions is at its core a Persona game, where it's kind of dungeon crawly and managing your stats by developing relationships with other characters. Kind of has like a little bit of dating sim sort of aspects to it. Not as complex as a dating sim where you have to like figure out the right responses to give. You can,
correct amount of alcohol to give them when you take them on the night dates.
Right.
You gotta go buy the roofies.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta manage your finances. There's an economy to it.
Yeah, there definitely is.
Wes, big fan of rape games. But yeah, Tokyo Mirage Sessions is a cool game. It's nice that it kind of got removed from its exile on Wii U because it did not perform very well on Wii U in terms of sales. Again, I'm sure just by having like the bigger install base on the Switch, it did a little bit better, which is good because it's a cool game. Moving over into February, we got a few games worth noting here. The Dark Crystal Age of Resistance Tactics.
Yep.
I mentioned that one because I kind of like the Dark Crystal. I like kind of like the puppetry to that one. Kind of a cool visual style.
There was actually a graphic novel series that came out recently based on Dark Crystal. It's very cool.
It's awkward because you can see their hands under it, too. And this is a drawing, so they didn't need to do that.
I know. They were really dedicated. They were super committed to that style.
Authenticity. There's a verisimilitude when you can see the puppeteers.
Yeah. Verisimilitude?
Truthfulness.
Oh, yeah. I like that word.
It's a good word.
Verisimilitude.
And it plays like a Final Fantasy Tactics game. As the word tactics is in the title, you would hope that it does that.
Right. Yeah. Right. I'm not sure if it has like the same depth of customization as you would get in a Final Fantasy Tactics, where you can mix and match all these different skills from different classes and create your broken characters. But I don't know. I thought it was a kind of a neat idea for a game that I stuck on a wish list, and maybe someday, when it's on deep discount, I might check it out. Darksiders Genesis was on the...
I didn't even know this came out on the Switch.
It sure did.
Yeah.
It came out in February.
February.
Did you play any of it?
No.
On any other systems or anything?
No.
Okay.
It's the only Darksiders I didn't play, and...
It's more of like a isometric top-down sort of game. It's not like
like Hades.
Okay, well,
we were just playing Hades. Yeah, we'll get to that eventually, but yeah. We just got done playing a bit of that. So.
An interesting approach for the Darksiders series, because there's not anything like that in previous installments.
Yeah, I think they just kind of wanted to do a game for each of the four horsemen, and then they got to the third, and it's been years since they started this. So, like, fuck it, just get something out quick.
Okay, we got to do another
one. Let's just wrap this shit up. That's what I felt like when I saw Darksiders Genesis, because it really was, it came out not really that long after Darksiders 3.
It wasn't like a...
Yeah, there's a 3.
Okay.
Yeah, Darksiders 3.
Aptly named. Very good.
Yeah, you're Fury.
Lady with a whip. That's not one of the four horsemen of Apocalypse.
Nope.
They're just like, they just said four horsemen. It's not based on anything
biblical. Well, this is Strife.
They're just like...
It was War, Death, Fury, and Strife.
So we got War and Death.
Yeah, Famine, Death, Pestilence, and War.
Yeah.
So Famine and Pestilence.
What would the game based on Famine be? It's like going around knocking food out of people's
hands.
Exactly.
No. It's like,
the opposite. People's fields.
It's the opposite of an overcooked game.
It's a crop dusting simulator, except it's salt instead of dust.
And the horseman in Darksiders Genesis is Strife.
And Pestilence, you just go to the grocery store without wearing a mask. Pestilence would have been a good one to release
for 2020. Yeah, that would be great.
It would have been a perfect game.
Man, that would have been like the icon of our year. Just the pure...
Mm-hmm.
The single.
Yeah.
But it's just strange. Like, you're making games about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and...
They changed it because they're too lazy to get creative.
You never bothered to just like Google one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. You're like, yeah, Strife and Fury, right?
Why not? Sure. Give them a gun and a whip. All right. Let's go.
And then Angst and Versimilitude.
Versimilitude.
Devil May Cry 3 was also in February. So we can... Yep.
I love that game.
Give Capcom some money for their shenanigans if you want to. Yeah, Devil May Cry 3, that's probably, that was the first one I played in the Devil May Cry series, and...
I think it's the best one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one wasn't good, two was a train wreck, four was okay.
One was alright. Okay, we'll agree to disagree on that one. Okay. I thought it was okay. I never finished it.
So I said it was okay.
Yeah.
Two was a train wreck.
Okay. I think I played about 10 minutes of two.
Yeah.
And its reputation preceded it by the time I got around to it, so I didn't engage with it all that much. But yeah, 3 is a cool game.
Yep.
Mega Man Zero and ZX Legacy Collection. I spoke about all those games at length. I was playing through one a month at the beginning of the year there. It's a cool collection. Those are interesting games. Once you get into the ZX games, there's two ZX games and four Zero games. The four Zero games are very much a product of their time, where they're very... They're short and intended for multiple playthroughs. And if you're trying to engage with it and kind of spec out your character in one run through, it gets very grindy. It's more meant for like your first playthrough being very difficult. You play through again with a new game plus, you get a little bit better in your skill and also in your upgrades. And then the more you play through it, the more upgrades you're able to get and carry with you over to the next run through. But the ZX games, which came out on the DS, whereas the Zero games were on Game Boy Advance, the DS games were much more friendly to just single playthroughs, a little bit longer as well. You had more levels to work through. And then the Metro games, Last Light Redux and 2033, were on Switch that month as well.
I think it's cool they got ported there. I played those games. I think they're fantastic.
So you can play through a very dire depiction of Russia or a very accurate depiction of Russia. I'll let you decide.
Yeah, it's very much in the set in like the post-apocalypse where, of course, things have gone sideways.
Mm. More sideways.
Yeah, it's like what would you say? It's like a stealthish horror game. It's all done first person. It's really good, very atmospheric. Not your typical run and gun kind of game.
Mm-hmm. So, and then last up for the month of February was a game called Bloodroots. That's a game that I played. It's kind of like it's an action game, a little bit similar to what we saw from Hades, except it's a bit more based on quick action, quick twitchy action. where you need to pick up things in your environment, just kind of chuck them at your enemies, or initiate a sequence of events, like where it'll like initiate an explosion, take out a group of enemies, and it's also very much you die and repeat very quickly, a little bit like kind of like the same principles like Celeste, where you know you're probably going to take a lot of deaths, so and you're just kind of trying to improve on your rhythm the next time you're up. For the month of March, we got Ibn Ob, which is a cooperative platformer game that I did not play.
Wow.
But interesting looking game. Also, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX.
Currently, the longest titled game of the year.
Really? It is, more than Tokyo Mirage?
Yeah,
session.
Beats it out by, I would estimate that's about 7 characters.
Wow. Yeah, because
one additional space.
Tokyo Mirage Sessions, like that sharp F-E, it's sharp as in like the musical symbol for sharp, which is like a pound sign or a hashtag.
So were they in the high school band?
No, but it is like the narrative of the game is like, your main character dude is friends with this girl who wants to become a pop star.
Oh,
and
good.
And she wants you to help. So you're like, okay, well, I guess I'll try to become a pop star too, since you really want to do it. And then she like signs a record deal. And through a lot of the game, you're like, you get like different musical performances. And the music of the game is actually pretty legit. It's like as far as like J-pop stuff goes. And it comes into play in battle because if you have a couple of characters who like have a musical number together, you can initiate special attacks where they give you like this little mini performance and do massive damage with the power of song.
Oh. So it's like the class that no one ever wants to play is bard, but it's a game where you're all bards.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Except some of your bards have swords.
Oh, you don't say.
But that's not Pokemon. That's Tokyo Mirage Sessions. I've played a Mystery Dungeon game. I did not care for it. So even adding Pokemon in the mix wouldn't get me to play it again.
Yeah.
Stella is a kind of a puzzle platforming.
It's a streetcar named Desire Simulator.
It is, yep. Where you play as a cable car. Yeah. And Marlon Brando.
Yes.
It's a puzzle platformer in the vein of like Inside and Limbo, except it is bad.
Oh.
That's the word I was looking for. It's not a good game.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I played that one. Didn't care for it. You can do much better. Like it wasn't like a game that was just broken, but if you're going to pay $10 or $15 for a puzzle platformer style game, you have a boatload of better options on Switch, including games like Inside and Limbo.
Little Nightmares, something like that.
Little Nightmares. And there's another one. Actually, I've already talked about it. Shady Part of Me, which came out pretty recently within the past month, that, you know, better options.
True.
Animal Crossing came out in
this
March.
Game? Yeah, fill me in on this one.
Animal Crossing, it is a match 3 puzzle game.
Good. Nice. With a... Yeah, it says Football Manager at the end of it.
That's very Football Manager, yeah. And all of the icons are Terrell Owens.
Yeah. Well, let's not beat around the bush here. This is the game of the year. Like, I don't know anything that could compete against with this.
Like, just in terms of, like, hours logged. Yeah, like...
What are you talking about? We just talked about one Stella.
No, I mean...
It's one of those games that kind of transcends into pop culture, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see, like, People Magazine doing top 20 things to do in your Animal Crossing game.
Or like, you see, like, Elijah Wood and Danny Trejo doing, like, talk shows using, like, Animal Crossing avatars, like, in their Animal Crossing islands.
Yeah. Then... this game had all kinds of, like, cultural mass appeal mm-hmm. that I think, you know, your hardcore gamer would probably not want to say this is the game of the year. I don't see how you can say otherwise. Like... This is going to go down as, you know, one of probably the top 3 games to come out on the Switch.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting way of looking at it because, like, your enthusiast gamer, you know, might try to reach to something like Last of Us Part 2, Cyberpunk, but these are games that
definitely not Cyberpunk. What are you talking about?
Right. Well, there are some in the enthusiast audience that might try to still apologize for that game. But there are issues that people have with a lot of those games, some justified, some not so much. But like
Doom Eternal, that was another one.
Doom Eternal came out this year, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, by all accounts, is a very good game. But, like, a game that, when you look back at 2020, a game that sort of, like, defines the year. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find another example than Animal Crossing, when we're all trapped inside our houses. What do we spend the most time doing? Building our little animal dollhouses.
I think there's a wonderful bit of escapism that was needed kind of right at this moment, too.
And Animal Crossing is so much about, like, going through your routine. Like, once you have your island built, and at this point, yeah. I'm spending, like, maybe 20-30 minutes a day just kind of going in, logging in, checking in how everyone's doing, cleaning up anything that needs to be cleaned up, picking up sticks, plucking weeds, maybe harvesting some fruit, selling off, seeing if there's anything I want to buy. And just kind of going through, like, the checklist. Okay, did I chop down my money tree and plant a new one? Did I, you know, assess the fossils that were there? Is the art grifter and his little steamboat up there that's going to try to sell me fake art? Did I check in with him? So
why check in with him if he's selling you fake art?
Because sometimes he has real art, in which case you donate it to the museum.
Yeah. It's like a even more long-winded routine of collecting, like, you know, fish and the bugs and stuff like that.
Do you get to keep the art?
You do.
Instead of donating it to the museum?
You say,
F you guys, this is going in my bathroom?
You can keep the art. Yeah. Likewise, when you assess the fossils, you can sell it, like, you can sell your fossils at the store. You can donate your fossils to the museum.
Yeah, they make good decorations, too, honestly.
Or you could just place them around your island and have big dinosaur skeletons just scattered around.
Yeah, no harm in that.
But yeah, and people get really creative with the sort of, like, designs that they do for the island. You get things just from, like, a tropical island to, like, forest island. Like, I've seen a couple of videos of people who just kind of, like, create this slum with, like, trash and stuff scattered everywhere. Yeah. And, you know, you just kind of make it what you want. And there is a limited tool set. Like, this isn't Minecraft or anything, but it is really fun to see what people can do with the limited tools that they have. Yeah.
Well, and you can terraform your entire island if you feel so inclined. You can kind of make whatever you want out of the dimensions that they give you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just one of those games where a lot of people find different ways to enjoy it. It's such an open-ended game. It's nice that there's no finish line. It's just sort of for you to, you know, be happy.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what the point of the game is, which is truly wonderful. And, yeah, you know, it's got a lot of people that... you know, wouldn't know shit about a lot of the other games, but, you know, they're obsessed with Animal Crossing. Mm. Like, it's pretty cool. And, to their credit, they're consistently coming out with new content.
Yeah.
They're always coming up, not just the fact that, you know, certain, like, fish and insects will come in and out of...
Season,
yeah. But just that they also keep, like, adding in things like pumpkins and... Mm. You know, building snowmen and things like that. So
yeah, there's a snowman for the winter update. The holiday stuff is still going until the 15th of January, I think.
Yeah.
So you can still, like, collect all your holiday things. One thing I will say about the holiday update is, you know, back when they did the Easter thing, I think they called it Bunny Day.
Yeah.
But there were all, like, those eggs that you could dig up and shoot out of the sky. You can get all of the recipes to make all of your egg decorations and clothes and stuff. They were abundant. So much to the point where
they had to patch it. I think after
they had to adjust how much these things would show up. And I think when it came to the holiday stuff, they went too far in the opposite direction. It was really difficult to get any of the DIYs for the holiday stuff, to the point where it was I was just trying to, like, to decorate Ripley and Mika's houses. I upgraded their houses so they had a bigger room, and I was going to fill it with, like, holiday stuff so that, you know, They can go in and, like, hey, look at all these presents we got. And they got a kick out of it because I was able to pull it off. But it was a couple of days before Christmas, and I had not gotten any of the holiday DIYs. So I had to go to the Discord group. My buddy Jason on there sent me a couple of trees. And not, like, 30 minutes after he sent me some holiday trees, I finally found a DIY for one and just started making them en masse.
Nice.
But there were, like, a total of... 7 or 8 different DIYs you could shoot out of balloons, and they're supposed to have, like, a 15% spawn rate. I got one.
Oof.
Yeah, and there's still time if I want to finish collecting if I want to. But, and I even kind of, like, came up with some methods, did some research on some methods for helping balloons spawn that involved with, you know, They'll spawn every 5 minutes, but a lot of times you have to like go and talk to someone on your island or engage with Blathers at the right time in order to like come out and have them respawn. And I got to a point where I was like spawning 6 balloons in a row, and at a 15% spawn rate, if you shoot down 6 to 8 balloons, you should get something. Yeah. And I wasn't getting anything.
Yeah, that's just bad luck.
Yeah, it was really frustrating to have that sort of streak of bad luck. But anyway, I think the next big Animal Crossing is in March. They're going to have a lot of like the Mario decorations and furniture. Well, that'll be pretty cool.
Also, you know what's going to happen in March 20th? It'll be the 1 year anniversary of the thing.
Yeah, sure will.
You know, people will have had it for a full year.
Yep.
Which, you know, that'll, I think, really be showing the longevity of it if it continues. If it doesn't have a lot of, you know, if it keeps that, like, recidivism or whatever, if it keeps people coming back to it beyond a year with new content that they keep adding, then...
I think they've talked about adding new content to it, and I think that new content will come throughout at an okay pace, maybe not as steady as 2020, but in 2021, I suspect they'll have some new content.
And they can always just bring back the last year's stuff too. They can have that come back,
and then like maybe add a couple other things, like here's all the Halloween stuff again, but then plus a couple of extra things maybe. But I don't know. I don't know what happens past that. But, you know, I think we still got at least another year.
They go MOBA?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, just a battle royale.
Yeah, I think so.
But, yeah. A couple other games worth mentioning for March. Panzer Dragoon came out that month. That was the remake of the Sega Saturn game. That was worth mentioning because it was bad. It's another bad game.
Yep.
So avoid that one.
Hey, here's a bad game. What should we do? Remake it and put it on the new system. All right.
I mean, I think that... On the Sega Saturn, it was a more acceptable game. It was like a pretty well-remembered game because it's a little bit more novel to have an arcade-style shooter like that. Like
just because something is novel and nostalgic doesn't mean it needs to be brought back again.
Right. This game should not be... And I think like the focus when they were remaking this game was like trying to create a VR experience. And
wait, what console was this on? Saturn?
It was on Sega Saturn originally, and then they remade it for Switch.
Well, I mean, Super Nintendo had that Terminator game.
Yep, and Star Fox.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what I compare it to the most. It's like Star Fox, except Star Fox 64 is a better game, still. Shinsekai Into the Depths came out. That is a Capcom game about some deep sea explorers.
Shinsekai, let's get it right.
Oh, yes, thank you. I apologize.
And it's then, like Decidueye is obviously Decidueye.
People keep calling Mimikyu Mimikyu. I think it's a little too on the nose.
Yeah.
Mimikyu?
Yeah.
Isn't that what it is?
That's what people... That's what I've heard the most often.
Mimikyu.
Yeah, Mimikyu.
Which is what I think it is.
I think it's Mimikyu. Sounds a little bit more islandy, I think. Mm. And it's an island game.
All right.
I mean, no, it is. Objectively, an island game.
You can make an argument for that, but...
No, I mean, the game is...
God damn it, John. And I think he wins it. It's good.
It's an island game. Yeah, I'll murder both of you. It'll be a good time.
Get blood on your jacket, though? I don't think so.
Ah, people like this jacket.
I mean, but then you like also have like other like Decidueye. How did you say it before?
Decidueye.
Decidueye. That sounds more islandy. That's perfect. Like Togedemaru. That's kind of an islandy sounding name.
Togedemaru didn't...
Piyukumaku?
Piyukumaku?
Now, Togedemaru was Gen 7, wasn't it?
Is it? No.
Was it in Kalos? It wasn't in Kalos. It was Dedenne. The little mouse, electric mouse character.
Yeah, Dedenne sounds islandy.
Togedemaru was Alolan, I thought.
Was it Alolan?
Yeah, that was Gen 7.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I know, well, it's really forgettable.
Yeah. I like Togedemaru.
Stupid steel squirrel.
Good job. That was a game that came out in March.
I wish I played this game. I still can. It's still there. Come on. But this is on my list.
Yeah, it's not one of those games that's going to disappear on March 31st like some of the other games Nintendo's putting out. And I don't think Nintendo published Good Job, but I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, made by the developers who did like the Stretchers. I don't know. Now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but yeah, it's kind of like a game in the vein of the Stretchers or Overcooked, where kind of the point is the chaoticness of it. Except you're, what are you doing? You're like in an office building, just kind of doing tasks like move the copy machine from here to there, and you can try to do it for real, or you can just crash through walls. Ita came out in April. Moving on to April.
It's pronounced Ita.
Okay, I apologize, Ita. I'll let you have that one.
I believe that's actually an L, so that's Ulta.
Ulta. This was a twin-stick shooter, kind of in the visual style of...
That sounds like a name an author would make a character. They're starting to make this new futuristic world.
Yeah. There's an apostrophe in there.
Ulta.
It's a twin-stick shooter with the sort of visual style of Hyper Light Drifter. That was a cool little game. I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Trials of Mana was out in April as well.
I played the demo of this. It is fun. I want to play it.
Yeah, it's a legit game. You own it.
I need to borrow it now.
Oh, you didn't
have to buy it? I don't know. I didn't buy it.
Okay, I thought you bought it.
You own it. Why would I buy it?
I don't know. That'd be weird.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I buy games that you own.
Well, it depends on the game. But, like, a game like that, this isn't a game you're going to be repeatedly playing. So, I could wait till John's done.
You could repeatedly play it. There are, if you care about this sort of thing, there's 6 playable characters, and you get different perspectives on their stories depending on which party you pick. You have your main, and they're like your primary story, and you get like other narrative elements from your other 2 party members that you pick as well. So yeah, I mean, there is, if you're interested in that, hearing all of their stories, there is value to replaying it in that way. I think what ends up happening is, I like this game. It's a fun little action RPG. Not super complex, but enjoyable, and you always feel like you're making some sort of progression. I think the reworked upgrade system is really good. The reworked combat system is really good. This is a remake. This is a remake of Trials of Mana, which first released in North America in 2019 in a collection, but it was a Super Nintendo game. It came out only in Japan. And where was I going with this?
I don't know.
Now I don't remember.
Yeah, you completely derailed. You got me lost too.
There ain't no getting off this train we're on. But, and anyway, yeah, I had a good time with this game. Because the stories are all sort of interchangeable, but the major beats don't change. Like, you're facing the same bosses in every storyline. So what they end up doing is they calibrate these boss fights to be winnable with any particular party, and what that does is kind of takes away any sort of strategy to it. You're just kind of waiting for them, like waiting to knock down their defenses and then hitting them with your big attacks. So bosses not quite as strategic as I like them in RPGs, but in general the game was a good time. Indivisible was also out in May, as well as Moving Out.
You were pretty mad on this game.
I didn't like Indivisible. No.
It looks fun.
It does. It's got a really nice art style to it. Really nice animations and moves really well.
There's a wide character.
There's a huge roster of characters that you can recruit. And the thing is, again, just like I was saying about Trials of Mana, the game is calibrated to where, you know, you can go through with any number of characters, so it becomes a lot of just spamming your attacks. And, like, it's interesting because each character is mapped to just a face button. And depending on the directionals, like if you're pressing up and A, you know, that character mapped to that face button is going to do a different type of attack as if you press, like, down and A. So there's a little bit of, like, almost like a fighting game sort of combination system to it. And some characters will knock down defenses, and then you follow up with a different character. And on paper, this sounds like a really interesting battle system. But because there is this huge roster of characters, they calibrate the game to where you can win with just about anybody. And then they're not able to be quite as strategic, because they don't want you to hit a wall with, you know, you have your group of characters that you like, but they just can't win this fight with how they're set up. So then you have this non-strategic battle system with some very strategic setups that you can do with your characters, and it just doesn't blend very well.
So this game would have been better if they just trimmed it down to, like, 6 people.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. It's literally called Indivisible.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot break up a team. You cannot break these people up. That's what the name of the game is. It'd be kind of shitty if they were like, by the way, you can't win with this team. Fuck you. Swap them out.
Right. Well, then they should have reconsidered their battle system.
Like, the game could be called Kind of Indivisible, and you get away with that.
I'm okay with that.
It's kind of a long title.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's no longer than fucking...
They're undercutting their own
drama. Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX Football Manager.
They're sort of undercutting their own drama there. Like, indivisible, kind of. Kind of indivisible. Like, if you're saying the Pledge of Allegiance, like, kind of indivisible with some liberty and a little bit of justice for all, which might be more accurate to reflect our country.
If we got enough, some justice for all.
Yeah. Justice, there's just enough to go around, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Streets of Rage 4 came out in April.
This is fun.
Great game. I love Streets of Rage 4. I was playing it the other day, just at work. Had some time to kill at the end of the day.
This would have been a bad month if not for this game coming out.
Trials of Mana was good, too.
Yeah.
For a game you're playing it on Christmas Eve, too. You're playing on Christmas Eve, too.
I was, yeah. Me and Jeff were going through it.
Yeah, and then Zeke wanted to play, and James was like, no.
I'm not sure where that came from, because he has played that game before. Zeke has.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I wasn't going to, like, undercut him in front of his kid. But I was like, you've let him play this before. And also, we played this game when we were his age. Like, we played Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
And, you know,
It's a cartoonish brawler.
Yeah.
You know.
I think I turned out okay.
Sure.
What? You're looking at me like that, John. Like,
I was waiting for you to agree. I'm a little bit disappointed by your response.
Yeah, so are your parents.
You son of a bitch. Oh.
You got iced. This jacket wet. What's it done to you?
I only get to bring it out like 2 times a year.
He's smoking a cigarette. But yeah, Streets of Rage 4, really cool game. Nice roster of characters. I finally did unlock everybody. And even though I unlocked everybody and the points now become meaningless, I was still going through, like, trying to save all of my special moves so I have the maximum number of points at the end. There's nothing else to like. I'm actually a little bit surprised that they haven't added more content, because there are a number of boss characters in this game that you think they just make playable later on, like as DLC.
Yeah, like Adam the cop Hunter. Lady and the cop dude.
The cop lady and the cop dude, the commissioner. Max from Streets of Rage 2.
The commissioner looks like what Jeff Gordon would look like if he just worked out more.
Do you mean Jim Gordon?
Jim Gordon, sure.
Or is it his brother Jeff?
It's more Jeff.
He's commissioner of
Jeff Gordon was
Metropolis.
A race car driver, is that right?
Jeff Gordon's a race car driver, yeah.
Wow. Oh!
Also a police commissioner.
So despite my best efforts.
No, you're not even close.
No, yeah.
I don't know if there's two professions so far apart as police commissioner and race car driver. One is all about law and order and oppressing minorities, and the other is about driving in a circle, only turning left.
Also oppressing minorities, though.
Actually, yeah, you're right. Nope, there's some similarity.
Well, the NASCAR community, the fans of NASCAR, are not particularly kind to people that aren't white.
Hmm.
NASCAR itself is trying their best, but knowing they don't bite the hand that feeds them.
Which is rednecks.
Yeah.
Do you think NASCAR vehicles can turn right? I was listening to an episode of Retronauts. This is where this is coming from.
Oh, my God.
I was listening to an episode of Retronauts, and they were talking about Nintendo products pre-video games, kind of like in the 60s and 70s when they were doing a lot of manufacturing of toys. And they were very early in the market of creating, like, more affordable RC cars. And they did this by making RC cars that didn't have the mechanism to have them turn right. They could only turn left, which is like the most Nintendo solution to anything ever. That's delightful.
Yeah. But half the turning radius, half the cost.
Right. That's the thing. They're able to make this cheaper version of an RC car that became more affordable. And of course, like, they were trying to swindle anybody. Like, hey, this thing only turns left. But if you think about it, like, if you're treating this like just like racing around a track, you only got to really turn left.
Yeah. I mean, they can turn right, though. I mean, they have to, like...
So there are tracks that...
They go into the pit and stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Do they do that in NASCAR? I don't know.
It depends on how the pit is, because the pit's on the inside. So depending on how the road is. So
they got to get in and out. They got to get in. They have to get in and out of it.
Turn left into the pit.
Following the rules,
you turn left to get out of it.
They're awful.
You like, put it in reverse and then go left in reverse.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're going right.
Do a circle in reverse.
Their Nintendo steering wheel is perfect.
It's a Wii Remote steering wheel inside their car. But yeah, just
what game?
Sorry, I snapped there.
really goofy solutions to the problem of like shit's too expensive. What can we do about that?
Yep.
What if it didn't turn right?
That's my dad's logic on the truck he has, where he's like, I don't want it to have any features. I don't want it to do anything. Because if it has that feature, it means it's going to break, and then I have to pay for it to get fixed.
Hmm.
So it's like he doesn't have automatic windows or anything like that.
This thing has brakes. I'm going to have to fix it.
AM/FM radio. Oh, yeah, right? You know?
Can they still do that? Can they still, like... Do they still manufacture trucks that don't have automatic windows and locks and things like that? Really?
Yeah, they still do it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Some people feel more comfortable with a manual window in cases of, what if I drive into a lake?
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing.
That's fair. To live with that sort of paranoia.
Yeah. Such a weird...
Sir, you live in Nevada.
Well, what if the Mothman comes after me?
Oh, the Mothman, yeah. It's true.
I go through Poughkeepsie a lot. It's going to happen one of these days. Gotta be ready.
Let's move on to May.
All right, where am I?
The Hunt Down is a little side-scrolling action game. It looks kind of cool. Elder Scrolls Blades came out in May as well.
So stupid.
Some from your best friends over there, Bethesda. How are they doing recently?
I don't know. I haven't checked in on them in a while.
They did Doom Eternal, so at least there's that.
Yeah, they did that. But, I mean, Elder Scrolls Blades was their attempt to shut the fans up.
And with a mobile game?
Give themselves more time until Elder Scrolls 6 comes out. Is it 6? Whatever. Whatever the next one is on the new console.
Do you think Elder Scrolls 6 comes out or Starfield comes out first? And how exclusive will it be to Xbox? The answer is totally. Oh,
God, I hope they're not exclusives. I'll be so sad if they're exclusives.
I think that's something notable that's just worth mentioning this year. Microsoft went on a spending spree. They bought Bethesda and Obsidian and In Exile and Double Fine. They are scooping up studios right and left.
I mean, I don't own a PS5 or anything, and I don't plan on buying one for a while, but if... I don't know if I end up getting an Xbox if it goes exclusive, because I just love Elder Scrolls so much.
I was listening to another podcast that's RPG-focused, and they were talking about that sort of situation where you're kind of like seeing this widening gulf between PlayStation and Xbox, whereas it seems like all of the Japanese RPGs are going to continue to be on PS4, and then all of the Western RPGs move over to Xbox simply because Microsoft is buying everything up. And it's bad. Like, this isn't a good thing.
I don't want to buy a PlayStation and an Xbox. Because there's going
to
be...
Because you don't... Because to play the next Final Fantasy VII Remake installment, jeez, and then the next Elder Scrolls.
So all this occurs while the PC player is buying popcorn to just enjoy the fight.
Right?
Well, then you're missing on games like Spider-Man. That's an exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a good game.
I'll just play Separation Anxiety.
Oh, that game is so good.
That game's for real.
Yeah. But it's... I forgot where we were going with this. Where are we going with this?
Just Xbox. That there's kind of a...
We're going to talk about Elder Scrolls Blades.
I keep... there are all these like prognosticators who are just have like these rose-colored sunglasses, pie-in-the-sky ideas. Like, well, no, like those games will still come out in multiple consoles. They'll still be multi-platform. Like, you don't pay $7.5 billion...
Well, it can also be
for games that were already coming out on your system. You're paying for exclusivity. These Bethesda games were already going to come out on Xbox. Why would they buy them up for $7.5 billion, more than Disney paid for LucasArts, to just say, "Oh yeah, put it on our competitors as well"?
It could be what I've already seen them do with other games is do timed releases where a certain console gets the privilege of releasing it 3 or 3 to 6 months in advance.
Maybe.
It could be doing that, which I would be fine with. I'd be like, all right, I'll wait extra 3 months for this so I can play it on the better console.
I don't know.
But again, Microsoft is not obliged to do that. I guess they could just tell everyone to sit and spin if they feel so inclined. It's their property now.
Yeah.
But, they make money. They still make money. Like, if it goes on to PlayStation and it sells well on PlayStation, that's still money in the bank.
But wouldn't they make more money because they own the studio now?
Maybe. I'm not exactly sure how that works. But, like...
Because Bethesda will get a cut from the PlayStation sales. but they're owned by Microsoft. So essentially, it would be Microsoft double dipping in the sales.
But how many sales do you have to get to then make up for $7.5 billion? I just don't think you spend that kind of money unless you say, this is ours now, and we're going to keep it.
I'm just trying to be hopeful, John.
You're trying to play Elder Scrolls on your PlayStation.
Don't shit in my cereal, John, all right? Come on. Just
I'm saying you're going
to... Let me have a good, healthy breakfast.
You're going to need to buy a PC, and you're going to have to live with it.
I have a PC.
There you go. Will it run Crysis?
I need to upgrade my PC. That would be a way I get around this.
We're not that kind of podcast.
I could just upgrade my PC. I've been mean to do that anyways.
You missed all the holiday deals, man.
I know. Fuck!
Yeah. If there was ever a time to
do it, it was weeks ago.
We got another Wii U port. Wonderful 101 Remastered.
Why?
That's a game. I actually I saw that. I think I mentioned this before. I saw that in a bargain bin at Target. It was 50% off, but didn't have a price tag on it, so I didn't know. Like, if it's 50% off $60 or is this 50% off $30? I was like, do I take this and ask? Wait a second. I didn't like this game much on Wii U. What am I doing? And I put it down.
And walked away.
And I continued living my life.
You realize that there was no price at which this is a bargain.
People like this game, and it is like, it's got an interesting visual style to it. It is a game that does appeal to some people. I don't know. I just never got into the combat of it because the combat is, for me, disorienting because you're managing this large group of people and they're
that you're conscripting into service.
That you're conscripting. It looks like Pikmin, but it doesn't play like Pikmin. It plays more like a traditional Platinum action game because the game is made by Platinum.
Is this the same people that made Beautiful Joe?
I mean, there's probably some crossover because Beautiful Joe was made by Clover, which was a studio at Capcom at the time. And they also went on to make Okami. But then they split off from Capcom, all the developers there. Maybe not all of them, but a lot of the developers who were at Clover because Capcom closed down Clover Studios.
Sad because Okami was great.
Mm-hmm. And then they went on to form their own studio in Platinum. So there probably is some crossover between Beautiful Joe and...
I'm surprised we haven't gotten a Beautiful Joe remake.
I'm not. Capcom doesn't like making games.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're not as bad as Konami, which, fuck Konami, but...
Isn't that a camera company?
Not this again. Come on. Real Myst Masterpiece Edition. I like Myst. This game came out, and I played it. It was fun.
And it's very different from Fake Myst.
It is. This is Real Myst.
Yes.
The difference is, since you asked, since you brought it up, Wes, the difference is in the original Myst, it was a series of stills, and there are things that you interacted with, whereas in Real Myst, you are moving around the island in first person. So you actually have agency over where you are walking, as opposed to clicking around.
Close the damn doors.
Close those elevator doors. Close them good. Shantae and the Seven Sirens came out on the 28th. This was a new Shantae game. A couple of them got ported over, maybe not in 2020.
And that's enough. Next game is...
These are legitimately good Metroid-style games. These are good. Next game is Resolution,
which is oddly poor.
Stop it. This was the game that was a pretty blatant ripoff of Hyper Light Drifter.
Oh, okay.
Which is the reason...
I remember this one being impossible to search for, because it's such a nebulous term for gaming in general, that if you're like, resolution, game, and then it just tells you what every game's resolution is, you know?
It's like a big Wikipedia list.
Right,
like Pong.
Could you have, like, maybe done something here to make it, you know, unique, or stand out as far as titles go?
Right, well, I mean, they picked a pretty generic title, and they ripped off somebody else's art style, so...
Yes.
Let's see, Bug Fables came out in May as well. This one is a game that I stuck on the wishlist. It is an RPG in the vein of the older Paper Mario games, which is why I was interested, but I never got around to it, because I was instead playing Xenoblade Chronicles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and you guys, I don't know if I mentioned this, but Xenoblade is a really good game, and I like it a lot.
I need to get back to that.
Yeah. So was this a new game, or was this a port of a game?
This is a remaster of the Wii game that came out in 2012.
Okay.
But yeah, it is the original Xenoblade.
I feel like we need to make Ryan play one of these games.
I don't think we need to make him do anything.
No, I feel like we do.
I think he should, because it would make him a better person.
Put the gun down.
John, here, hold my cigarette.
Listen, right? Jeez. You have become a monster. It's a leather jacket. I can't help it.
But, you know, if you were to
You guys love the shit out of this game.
Yeah, I do.
Which one would you think we need to make Ryan play?
I think Xenoblade 1 would be one? Good entry point. Because it doesn't have as complex a battle system as Xenoblade 2. Xenoblade 2 is kind of jumping in the deep end.
Yeah.
And then Xenoblade Chronicles X is not available on the Switch as of right now. So.
Oof. I have my copy with me, so I'm just kind
of... Do you really?
I do. It's in my case.
Nice.
I have all my games with me.
All of the games that you own?
All my Switch games are with me.
Oh my goodness.
Well, not all of them. I don't have, like, Killer Queen Black with me, and Breath of the Wild I don't have with me.
Oh, how dare you.
I know. But, yeah.
So, also on the same day as Xenoblade Chronicles, very good game.
This was a fucking day for the console, by the way.
Yeah.
Holy shit. No, I mean, because not only that...
The three of them are great.
I'll say the next one, Borderlands Collection, came out, which I actually just bought over the holidays.
Nice.
So
yeah, all of these 2K games are on sale.
Yeah.
Borderlands 3 got down to $10. I'm pissed because I paid $60 for it.
Have you played it yet, though?
I have played Borderlands 3. I put a good chunk into it.
It would be funny if, like, you haven't played it yet and it was down to $10.
Oh, God, I'd be so pissed.
Yeah. I mean, so I've clocked dozens and dozens of hours playing the first Borderlands and the second. So the only one that's actually new territory is the pre-sequel, they called it. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'll save some observations for it for another one.
For any show.
It's
more Borderlands.
It's iterative, yeah. Totally is the next...
It's more Borderlands.
So yeah, there's some nuance there for the ways that it's different than the other games. But yeah, it's good. If you like that, or if you wanted a fun, like, kind of role-playing first-person shooter, this game's got you covered. It's almost its own unique thing.
And then there's Bioshock.
Yeah, Bioshock is next.
Bioshock Collection. John, you're playing that right now.
I am.
And? You're going to make me cry, aren't you?
I'm very close to just pulling the plug.
What?
Fucking A. I think it's a problem of expectations. And I'm trying to get through the game on its own merits, because I think from just kind of like this mythos I had built up in my own head from things that I, like, bits and pieces that I heard about the game, I was expecting something more akin to Metroid Prime. And it is not. It is more just a straightforward first-person shooter, which is not really my style of game.
No.
So rather than, like, take a crap over a game in a genre I don't like, I'm trying to reserve some judgment and kind of see how I feel about it toward the end. I am not as excited to play any of the other Bioshock games now.
Yeah, Bioshock 3 is very run and gun. Mm-hmm. Like, that combat in that is very fast-paced.
Okay.
And it goes from where Bioshock 1, you're kind of like in those little rooms and they're coming at you in different areas and stuff like that. Bioshock 3, I forget what it actually is called, Bioshock something, Infinite, is like, we're on top of these buildings in the sky and we're using these zip lines to get around to different platforms, and there's guys scattered everywhere, and it's very run and gun in a very wide area.
Okay.
I feel like the only thing, I shouldn't judge it for how little bit I saw of the game, but it feels very carnival-like, and I don't really like the way the game looks. It just simply doesn't look like an enjoyable environment to be in as far as games
go. Yeah, it's enclosed, and like the carnival thing there was like some voices and some music that were happening, but those were like little vending machines that I could go around and purchase things from. And it's a game that's trying to strike this tone of, like, you're in this scary place and you don't know exactly what's happening, but there are these monsters coming to get you, and it's very disruptive to that sort of tone to have these vending machines that then start playing carnival music at you.
Looks good, though. I mean, I know this is an older game that we're now seeing on the Switch, but, I mean...
Yeah, when, like
I may not like the aesthetic, but it's a very good-looking
game. I think the Big Daddies still look really nice when you see them walking around. They still have, like, this intimidating presence to them. Even, you know, a good ways into the game. And I think I'm, like, nearing, like, the 50% mark.
Yeah, it looks about that.
A lot of what I've heard about the game when I have... vented some of my frustrations on the Discord group is like, oh, this game's more about the atmosphere and the story. Like, cool. I don't think the story is very good, because the story is very much a video game story, where rather than having like this big arc with character development and progression and high stakes, I'm five hours in.
Seems like a lot of... You got someone on an intercom telling you to go do things.
Right.
That's and exactly like, that's what all the Borderlands has always been.
I mean, as I say...
You accomplish this one thing, that's done. Okay, here's a new situation. Whereas that's not how you build a compelling narrative.
No, and I'll agree with you there. Like, it does have a pretty in-depth storyline, but you really have to, like, listen to all the tapes and everything like that. And for, like, the... pretty average gamer, they're not really going to sit there and get nitpicky about that type of thing.
So there is a
twist later on, but it doesn't really change anything about the game. You're still, oh my god, it's this, and then you move on and you do the same thing you've been doing. So the storyline is kind of, like, it's fine.
So like they do have this sort of like lore around the game. It's like those tapes that you pick up.
It's like a Dark Souls game. Like if you want the story, you have to kind of have to hunt it down. But if you don't want to, you can just go with the pre-plain story of whatever the guy's telling you, and then you're trying to get to what, Adam? Is that the guy's name? It's been a while.
No, Ryan? Maybe it's Ryan.
Yeah, you're trying to get
the guy whose family died.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. Hey, it was all right. We did it. We beat BioShock.
You're trying to get to him, and then blah, 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 and then BioShock 2, you are a big daddy. Mm-hmm. And you're going around saving the little sisters and everything like that.
Is it an escort mission game?
A little bit, but it's not painfully escort.
Okay.
Like, it's not like I'm protecting the president's daughter and, like...
You can say Ashley. We all know what you're talking about.
Yeah. You're not trying to protect the president's daughter and, like, oh no, she's been taken again. Damn it. You know, it's not like that.
No, those are the best parts of the game, though.
Go ahead, keep her.
Hang on to her for a while. Let me finish this, and I'll come back for her.
Yeah. And then Bioshock Infinite is, the whole thing is an escort thing. There's this one girl that goes with you. Huzzah. But you can completely ignore her. She won't get taken. She's not going to die.
Oh, so
now
and
then she'll throw you stuff to help you in battle. Like, she'll give you some ammo or whatnot.
So she's there for, like, color commentary.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what she's there for.
She's like Flounder and Little Mermaid.
Exactly.
You know, Ariel's got to bounce off of somebody.
Yeah. Essentially.
But, like, so I don't think that... the story is particularly interesting or well told. You're playing as this guy. He's just some guy. You're just some guy who, like, ended up in this place, and his only purpose is like, well, I'm here now, so I might as well help this other guy.
I don't think your opinion is going to get better. Which makes me sad, because I thought you'd like this.
And
I don't know why I thought you'd like this.
I was going to play them too, and I kind of wanted to play them. And what I saw didn't.
I enjoyed the game.
Changed my opinion on still wanting to play it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the game. I love Bioshock.
So I'll loan you when I'm done with these.
I already own it on PS4.
And then not you.
So sounds like Christmas came 2 days after Christmas for me, because I'm getting Xenoblade,
Bioshock.
This is gonna be good. And like the atmosphere of this game, like it's fine. I think that they're mostly accomplishing what they want to accomplish. Metroid Prime did it better 5 years before and much more efficiently. Like, if you're looking to create, like, an atmosphere of, like, loneliness and tension.
But where's the steampunk design, though?
Yeah.
If you're looking
where's the drill arm?
Come on.
No drill arms. There are some stealth space pirates, though, in Metroid Prime. So there's that. I don't know. Like, playing this game just makes me want to play Metroid Prime even more again. Because, like, that's more my style. Whereas... the primary gameplay mechanic isn't so much about the shooting. It's about finding your upgrades and sort of solving the maze of where you're supposed to go next. And a lot of times in Bioshock, when I'm solving the maze, it's mostly like, why
run
is
to this spot, go to this spot.
Why is the arrow pointing me here when it actually wants me to go to the elevator and press the button?
Yeah.
What do you think he would think of the maps in Borderlands?
Because the maps in Bioshock are so bad. These are awful, terrible maps.
I think they're fine.
Because the maps are, at the same time in Borderlands, are like massive and detailed and intricate and yet still impossible to read.
that's right. Holy crap, I didn't even think of that.
That's like,
where the fuck am I on this?
I know, it's so really confusing. And it gives you like an up or down arrow on the objective, and it's like, am I going up or down? This map is fucking vertical.
I actually want to try this now. I actually want to try this game now. Because I'm going to solve this inscrutable map.
If you're not liking Bioshock, you're not going to like Borderlands. Borderlands is very, run to this area, murder all these people, go back to this area.
More shooty shoots.
It's nothing but shooty shoots.
It's also more of a loot grinding game.
Yes.
So you're going to be expected to repeat certain stages. Like, if you just, like, play the game through and, like, in the course of 30 minutes, you're like, oh, wow, I found 2 red chests and 2 smaller green chests. It's like, okay, I'm just going to restart and do this 5 times. The next 30 minutes, I'll just do this.
Get more stuff.
And then I am going to be just, like, packed to the gills with sweet gear.
And then you'll find another chest. You'll be like, ah.
But then,
damn it.
But then, yeah, you'll play through the game for another few hours, get maybe 5 more levels, and then do it again.
I'm looking forward to getting into XCOM 2, though, because I picked that up as well. Well, I got it as well.
That it is truly a great game. The whole XCOM franchise, I think I've talked about Apocalypse before, loving that one. But yeah, the XCOM and XCOM 2 are fantastic games.
I think this is the XCOM 2 collection, if I'm not mistaken. There's like XCOM 2 and like an additional like a DLC pack or something. I don't know.
Because the first XCOM that came out maybe like 8 or 9 years ago, I'm guessing at this point. It's been a little while. But that kind of relaunched and rebranded it and made it much more, like, modern and took all of the same core gameplay from the previous installments of the XCOM series, but then just made them, you know, big and shiny and glossy and modern with all of the bells and whistles. You know, you'll see the reviews of these games. Two of the best reviewed games ever. And great, great games. Just, again, they are definite time churners. They will take a lot of time to get through.
That's okay.
So, I mean, yeah, just one city encounter you may spend 30, 45 minutes in, and you may get 40 minutes into it, and your team gets wiped.
Oh, no.
So, then you're fucked. You're totally fucked. So, yeah, you kind of got to be careful. And that's just one component of it, because there is sort of an overworld element to it. I'll stop talking about it. You play it and tell me what you think of it.
I'm interested in it. I'm actually okay with the idea of, like, playing these missions and trying to, like, having to, like, restart and tinker with, like, the loadouts or, like, who I'm taking along to... sort of like solve the puzzle to finish these things off.
Oh, because there is that RPG element. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got your different paths that you take your characters down, and even then, just because it's a scout, 2 different kinds of scouts you could make. You can make one that's super stealthy assassin-like, or you could make one that's just like broad view, chip damage, and high mobility.
From what I've heard about XCOM, there's some similarities to Valkyrie Chronicles, which are, I played a couple of those in the past couple of years. And I really
like those games. I saw you play that a while ago. I saw the same similar stuff there.
So yeah, looking forward to that. Moving over into June, Liberated came to the Switch, as well as The Outer Worlds and the Clubhouse Games.
Yeah.
We play some Mahjong.
We got to. You guys, we joke about Mahjong so hard, but we're going to do it. It's going to be a thing that happens.
Yeah, we're going to like play physical Mahjong. We're going to like get a board or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that would take longer than... The setup would take longer than playing it.
Maybe. You're saying we should go digital then?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'll see how much a copy...
Because if we get, you know, the physical Mahjong, then we have to get like green tea, and we have to get mats on the floor. And
don't you threaten me with a good time.
That sounds really nice. I think we got
to
do this.
We have to grow our mustaches really long.
Can we wear bamboo
hats?
That's
racist.
Yes.
Wait, what were you saying?
Bamboo hats. That's racist.
Oh, my God. The Outer Worlds also came out. That's a game that I was interested in getting. And apparently it's been updated to run a little bit better on Switch.
It's a meh.
Yeah, Wes gave it a meh, so it kind of got put on the back burner for me.
If you like games like that, they play Fallout. They did better.
Which is funny because Obsidian, I think they did like Fallout...
New Vegas.
Yeah.
They did Fallout New Vegas, and I hear that's a really good one. I never played it. At this point, it's the graphics. I feel bad as a person to say I don't want to play because it looks really bad.
And you are a bad person.
So.
A friend of mine was playing it on PC and downloaded a bunch of stuff from the Steam workshop. So like new texture packs, new lighting packs for the game.
Yeah, my looks gear can't handle that shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you take the time and apply a lot of modding to it, the game looks fantastic. And from what I hear of people that have played a lot of them, that Vegas is one of the better ones.
So. Yeah, people argue a lot between Fallout 3 and Vegas. I played a lot of 4. I played a little bit of 3. But Outer Worlds is very similar to that of Fallout, except it's open world, kind of. It's more flying to different planets, and you have a little bit smaller of a scale, because the planets only have X amount of areas that you can go to.
That's true of every planet.
Yeah. but it's not like you're... It's not a big, massive area that you have.
Fall straight through. What happens when you get to the middle?
It's not like you're going through one massive area. You're going through a bunch of smaller areas that are more... Yeah, I hope that makes sense when I'm blurring out.
Right. Yeah, I think we're generally on the same page.
Like, your flight to the space station, and you'll go to this one planet, but it's really only in the scope of this one, like, mountain range will block you out from exploring the rest of the planet.
Like, they'll give you a big vista, but they won't let you touch
it. The whole planet is not accessible to you.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it is a funny game. It's got some little quirks here and there. A lot of the things that they were doing alive with the... commercials and everything was really pushing how funny and quirky the game is. It's fine. I had a couple giggles here and there, but nothing.
So is it really that there's not much difference between, like, you're traveling to different planets as opposed to, like, you're all just on one planet just going to different spots on it?
Yeah.
Speaking of Metroid Prime, it kind of, like, reminds me of, like, the Metroid Prime 3 situation, which is objectively the best Metroid Prime game. And... Because one of the things about that game is, like, people will say, like, oh, it doesn't feel interconnected because, you know, rather than, like, all these areas, like, traveling between different areas on one planet, you're getting on your ship and going to different planets. And functionally, it's all the same thing. Whether you are in, like, the fire area in Metroid Prime and have different access points, like the ice area and, like, the forest area... It's functionally the same as being in one area of and on one planet in Metroid Prime 3 and having different access points where you can call on your ship and fly off to different planets. There's really no difference. You're still warping from one place to another and connected by either an elevator shaft or your spaceship. It's a video game. It's purely aesthetic, which one you're doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to take every excuse to talk about Metroid Prime 4.
I see that.
So this is a Switch exclusive.
Yes.
How is Jump Rope Challenge about?
Jump Rope Challenge is barely a game. Yeah. it's one of those things where when Japan was on...
it's an action RPG dating sim.
Yeah. Match 3 puzzle football
jump
manager.
Jump Rope JR. It is a JR game. Like JRG. It's a Jump Rope game.
Okay.
God damn it.
So, this was like when Japan was on much more of a lockdown situation because of COVID. You might have heard of it. A bunch of Nintendo developers just kind of like, here's a game that we made. Let's put it out there. And it's a free download. And just basically, like, you take your Switch Joy-Con and you pretend you're jump roping. And you can check in every day.
It's probably just made by the interns. I mean, it's...
I'm sure it's great for apartment complexes, high-rise apartment complexes. We're just jumping constantly.
No, I played it a time.
Actually, why?
Just for the show, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah,
this is the first time I heard about you talking about the game.
Because I played it for the first time a couple months ago, and it wasn't really worth mentioning, but now it's a retrospective. It's something that exists. It came out in 2020. Nintendo published it. So we're going to mention it on our Nintendo podcast.
It sounds like something you would make during your final in college.
I mean, maybe. Maybe.
I made a jump rope game.
I would imagine, yeah. But imagine, like, if you're doing it as your final project in some sort of, like, programming or design college, they'd want you to have something a little bit more ambitious.
I mean, it's not as good as the pee in the urinal game that you did last year, but
Super Pee Pee Brothers. I remember that one. That was a Wii exclusive.
Hi-yo.
So
it actually was, though.
Yeah, that's a real game. Some other games that came out in June: Summer in Mara, Star Wars Episode One Racer,
yep.
Trails of Cold Steel 3, which is an RPG I didn't like. Pokemon Cafe Mix, which is a matching puzzle game as well as like a cafe builder. It was a free download. I downloaded it, never played it.
Yeah,
you can probably tell from the description why. And there was the Pokemon Island of Armor expansion.
Yeah.
So it was when we started getting...
it's a big deal.
Yeah, the first of two big expansions to Pokemon Sword and Shield.
And it was great. As a Pokemon fan, we have a dedicated show for Pokemon, of course. But I love the shit out of it. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, and I still check into the Isle of Armor region every couple of days at least just to go and get those mints in case I want to change someone's nature.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I always feel like I am always in the world of Pokemon in some way, even if it's not one specific thing. So one given month, it may be like the mainline games. I might be you know, playing on a handheld, or I might be doing Pokemon Go or something, but this whole year has been tons of Pokemon, including these expansions, and yeah, it's good.
I really loved the diversity, because I think Isle of Armor added another 200 Pokemon into the Galar decks. And I really just love the diversity of being able to go in this, like, this big wild area that was much more intricate than the wild area on mainland Galar, and just find all this stuff. Yep. And just like evolving it and filling in the rest of the decks. I had a really good time. Like, for the first like 4 or 5 hours of the game, I was completely ignoring like the quest line that you're supposed to be doing on Isle of Armor. I was like, no, I'm going to go over there and see if I can find a Heracross. And just catching all the stuff. It was really fun.
Did they add a Heracross?
Yeah, Heracross is in it now.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
Yep.
Bad news, man. No Stantler.
No, what no Stantler. The
fuck? Yeah.
No Stantler, no Girafarig.
Is there Pinsir? Smeargle,
though. Pinsir's, yeah, Pinsir's in there.
Smeargle.
Yep.
I always wanted to make a good Smeargle. I don't know why.
Smeargle's a funny Pokemon.
Yeah.
Because it's
I've seen some really janky setups with those things, because it can learn any four moves.
Yeah.
So people can make some really broken things. That's why it's
or just some, like,
terrible stats.
Really good setup.
Yeah,
with a Smeargle. Delibird's in there too. Speaking of weird Gen 2 Pokemon, I fought a Gigantamax or Dynamax Delibird earlier today, and I really like fighting them because they give really good candy payouts.
Nice. You need to make a team to go against Emily.
Yeah,
for your work.
Yeah,
and it's made up of a Smeargle, Delibird.
Oh man.
This would be the challenge team. Who else will be put on that team?
All the wonky Pokemon.
Worst flying, I guess.
Just the wonky Pokemon. What the fuck is this?
Unknown is a good bad Pokemon.
Oh, wait, it's not in that game.
Yeah.
It has to be in.
Yeah, Sword Shield.
Yeah.
Maybe I was gonna say Beauphalon, but that's not really so much wonky. I'm just trying to think of one forms at this point that are in the game.
Yeah. I'll have to come back to that idea, but just see if you can beat her with a wonky team.
I can.
All right. I hope she's listening.
I'm
maybe like
pretty good at this.
A Alolan Muk.
That'd be funny.
That's kind of a weird one.
Let's move over to July. Catherine Full Body Edition, which is the first game from Atlas that came out on Switch.
I see what they did there with that name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty clever.
Yeah.
Crosscode, which is a game that I played for a bit, and I recently... I was planning on going back to it. I did for a few minutes, and I pressed the eject button. So I think I'm moving on from that one. It is a game that requires more attention than I'm able to give it at this point, so I'm just going to move on. I think in the end, like the combat system is pretty fun. I really dig the dungeons. It's got some really great Zelda-style dungeons. But just traversing the general overworld... is the thing that requires too much attention that I'm willing to give it at this point, because it does have some very intricate layouts to just like your basic stages or your hubs that connect your dungeons together. So it's something that like I think has to be like a main game that you're playing through. And there are times where I'm playing through, you know, 2, 3, 4 games at a time, and you can't really do that with CrossCode. It requires more attention than that. Deadly Premonition 2 was also in July.
Okay, no.
As well as Bloodstained Curse of the Moon 2, which is a game that, an 8-bit style Castlevania game that I really liked. We got, in addition to the Super Nintendo Online service, and that is Donkey Kong Country.
Classic.
It's probably classic.
One of the best games came out on that console.
Yep. And by the end of 2020, they'll have completed the trilogy, which is good. So nice. Those are essentials when you're putting together a Super Nintendo collection. Superliminal also came out in July.
Nice. Yeah. I played that game.
That's a game that you enjoyed, yes?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about it now? Or?
Yeah, deal. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I love this game. I thought it was fantastic.
Cool.
Well, actually, I have little notes here.
Oh, nice.
It's a small studio that made it. It started from a guy that was not even involved in gaming. He was involved in this Somnusculpt technology and came up with sort of this idea. Says he was actually inspired by a game called Antichamber, which is a game I played years ago and loved. Superliminal is like a puzzle game, essentially. It's you play through it in the first-person perspective. And, you know, right off the bat, they get you with a good hook for a game mechanic, which is that objects have... There's like, it's like this perspective to them. So, like, an object that's far away, if you were to take hold of it and then move it somewhere else with that's closer up, it would be bigger in your perspective. So they create a lot of puzzles involving you changing the size of objects. And that sounds so boring as I describe it, but it's one of those things where you've probably never seen this in a video game before. It's a novel concept.
Okay, so you're in a room, and there's a block of cheese on a table, and there's a door in the middle of the wall, higher than what you can jump. So the way you solve this is by changing the size of the block of cheese to make a ramp up to the door.
Yeah, precisely.
There's a good little...
Yeah, so that's like one of the very first puzzles you would encounter in this kind of game.
Yeah.
The narrative around it, too, is that you are basically in an induced coma, engaging in some kind of dream study. So the problem occurs in the game to kind of construct this narrative of an obstacle you have to overcome, is that you get trapped further and further and deeper into the dream state. Just like the plot of the movie Inception. I don't know if you guys remember Inception that well, but what they said. The further you go into dreams, if you take a dream into another dream, it becomes more unstable.
I want to see that Tenet movie.
I actually saw that.
Is it good?
It's really good. Indecipherable, but really fucking good.
I'm really tempted just to buy it. I feel like I'm going to like it because I loved Inception.
Yeah, I mean, it's even more out there as far as... science fiction mechanics go. I think Inception's relatively simple enough to follow along with. Tenet's genuinely confusing, but that doesn't mean it's any, you know, lesser of a movie. It's still very, very good. It'll just kind of make you scratch your head. And, you know, with Back to the Future, it's camp to think of how bad the time travel mechanic is in it. And it isn't really time travel, it's just the way that people perceive time. I digress.
That's a very common motif or theme in Christopher Nolan movies.
Yes. And so this game's super liminal. It really is fantastic. I love this game. I think because the puzzles are fiendishly clever. They never feel too tough. And a lot of it simply is just... I hate to say it, but a lot of it could simply be boiled down to you're in a room, find the interactable, and figure it out. You know, oftentimes it's simply just finding the object that your character can do stuff with that really determines the puzzle. And they find a way to keep it fresh. Like, as cool of a thing as that is, as, you know, augmenting the size of an item to get through a room, you don't really spend that much time doing it. And there comes a point where, you know, really you're the object that is being... changed in size.
That's deep.
No, I mean that literally. So
I mean, I've been an object that changes in size.
Hey yo. And I think that the kind of thing is, if you're playing through it, because you guys were really not that big on this game, it sounds like.
I think it's
like
fine. It's an interesting little thing. Like, it'd be...
It's a time killer. Like, it's not anything... I think they came up with a more interesting mechanic than they came up with an interesting game, if that makes sense. I do like how there's a playfulness to the mechanics, where sometimes you're just in a room and you have all these things you can manipulate, and you can, like, build yourself a tower and get to a spot where it's not part of, like, the main path of the game, but the developers realize, like, okay, here's something that you can get to, so let's put something here as, like, a little Easter egg.
Well, I think what I would say about that is there is a grandeur to the game that will emerge. Mm. You're not going to spend your whole life in art museums making cheese blocks bigger.
Okay.
The game totally derails at a certain point. Like, it's not going to be... If you were to play through the next half of the game, because it's probably what you guys got to, maybe about half the game.
Yeah, we basically got to the apple.
Yeah. Like, the next half of the game beyond that is where, again, in the narrative of the story... The dream state starts to fall apart, where things really become different and some truly beautiful environments are created that, again, are not, you know, kind of proper, clean environments like you would expect in a Christopher Nolan film. Again, you don't spend your whole time in an art museum or on back sets. Like, there comes a point where you're dealing with the notions of infinite space and these giant environments that they create, and it's all... absolutely beautiful.
Well, that's a good thing, because I think by the time I got to by the time we got to the quitting point for the day, we got to a point, and it was a really interesting puzzle. but they really hadn't done anything to lead you up to it. And that's the one with the apple at the top of the stairs. And you had to sort of like, and it was a manipulation on perspective, which is a kind of like the crux of all of the mechanics of the game. But they really hadn't done anything to lead you to the point where like the solution was a little bit more intuitive based on previous things that you had done. A lot of things you had done before was change the size of this thing, move it from here to there, click on all these tiny little tickets to make a trail to the switch.
Which I don't even think that's where we're supposed to do that one. But
I would hope not, because that is a tedious solution. And again, if that's not the way that it was supposed to be done, it should have been a little bit more intuitive.
Well, I think what they would say is that there's not a way it's supposed to be done. Every puzzle has multiple solutions.
Well, I'm not sure what the solution to that apple puzzle would be other than what it was.
Well, you could try to make the biggest fucking apples you can and try and fill up the entire room. I sure tried that. Those apples can be fucking huge, too.
But they're still going to get blown away by the fan every time. It's hilarious,
yeah. No, but, yeah, and again, I think that's probably, I would say that's the worst puzzle in the game, or the one that's least fully realized.
But to me, like, it's such an interesting idea because it was a new twist on the whole, like, perspective manipulation. Because it's not so much about I have manipulated the object. It is, like you were saying, I have now manipulated myself as the player to adjust where I am looking at things in order to create the solution to this puzzle.
Yeah.
And it just would have been really cool to see what they would do with like something with a little bit simpler of a solution beforehand to kind of lead you up to that point where you can
I hear that, yeah.
Have like this better eureka moment.
I mean, you're not the only one. If you look it up online, like you could just type in apple puzzle and the next word that's going to come up is superliminal.
Mm.
You know, it's a common complaint that people
have. And I'd be interested to talk to the people who made this game and kind of like what their roles are, because just as like an outsider opinion, it kind of seems like the difference between a programmer and a developer, whereas a programmer can come up with like, hey, here's a cool idea that I have and I can make this work. Whereas a designer would say, look, okay, that's a good idea, but you're starting at world 3. How do we get to world 1-1 and build them up to the point where this is something that it is a little bit more reasonable to expect them to figure out on their own?
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think it's really worth noting in a game like this, a couple of things. One, Pillow Castle. Have you ever heard of Pillow Castle?
Mm.
That's the development company that made this. They don't even have a Wikipedia page. This is a small project by a couple of dedicated people wanting to make a game. It's a $20 game. I got it on sale for $15.
And they made a really interesting one on their first try.
And it's a game doing something that is, in my opinion, singular, unique. This is special. Like, Antichamber is a out there game. And if you like mind-bending puzzles and really twisted worlds, it's a fucking fantastic game. If anyone's played Stanley Parable, you might get a little bit of Stanley Parable or Portal. That's in here too. And these are all like A-plus games. These are all top-notch games. So, you know, you've got this small project here trying its best and really accomplishing something. They made an airtight game. This is a very good game. Plays well. Looks good. Sounds good. Meanwhile, CD Projekt Red has thousands of people making one fucking game. And they make a game that's so fucking janked out.
For 8 years, that Sony won't sell it. They've been making this game for 8 years. And they whiffed. They whiffed.
You know, Superliminal deserves to be lauded for what they've done. A small project that had the ambition of showing you something new, showing you something you haven't seen before, accomplished it very, very well, in my opinion. Well worth tossing $15 these guys' way.
Yeah. I think it helps foster a healthy video game development environment, whereas you have these games that can exist with, you can have Superliminal existing in the same ecosystem as Donkey Kong Country, as Deadly Premonition, as Paper Mario the Origami King, which also came out in July, Carrion, which is an interesting sort of a take on a Metroid game coming out in the same month. Like, this is a really diverse, in terms of gameplay style and scope lineup that we're looking at on Switch so far. And it is definitely a good thing that these sort of projects get some bit of attention and some sort of outlet in which to put their games on.
Yeah. So again, and maybe some other game session, we'll get through to the end and you can kind of see what the whole point of it all was. And again, what I think are some truly beautiful set pieces that again just aren't your standard, you know, back sets or, you know, museum art room seating and shit.
Yeah. I mentioned Paper Mario. That also came out in July. That is a game I talked about at length. I like it. That's a cool game. And then also Carrion. It's an interesting sort of style of Metroid game because you don't really get a map, so it's a little bit more like maze-like in how you're tracking your progress. And also you're playing as this sort of like villain character, and like the sort of size of your, they call it your biomass, but the size of your character will determine your powers. And sometimes it is necessary to injure yourself, sort of take away from your mass in order to gain access to previous powers that you had. Anyway, I talked about that game at length as well. Really interesting idea for a game.
Looks very cool.
Looks very cool. Wish it had a map. But let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish off the rest of the year.